Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
You are indeed.
We are rocking in the studio
on June 2nd. Wow. A very warm day out here in Southern Cal, right?
Beautiful weather. Beautiful weather.
It's nice. Yeah. I'm happy we live here. So, we have an amazing show. But
we absolutely
before we
do.
Get to that, Andrew.
You'd like to pay some bills?
I think so.
Let's do that. We're certainly grateful to them. Let's do it.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed. And what a show we have today, Michael. Michael, oh, I'm excited. We have
so
you.
So off the cuff.
That's right. Wait a minute for my transition. We have you, and we have me. We also have Phil and Barry and Hillary and Monica. Get Donald Trump in here. We're going to be in good shape. We'll settle this whole thing right now. Are you ready?
Ladies and gentlemen, what Andrew is trying to say is that we have two very esteemed actors in the studio with us today, both of whose work in film, TV, and theater you know very well.
You do indeed. In fact, from Seinfeld and the new Mission Impossible, the one and only Phil Morris is here.
Oh, yeah. Give it up.
And that's all just from me and Michael.
And from the blockbuster hit film Grease, the musical, and the recent highly rated live Fox TV production of Grease, that lovable hooligan and a very recently very married man, Barry Pearl, is with us.
I'm not sure. Thank you. Yes, Phil and I got married at the end of...
I'm not sure if they were clapping for you or the fact that you're married. Either one is good, though, I guess.
It is California.
Yes, after all.
And between the two of them and you and I, Michael, we are going to talk Hillary and Monica, currently on stage in West Los Angeles at the Odyssey Theater, directed by the uber-talented Joel Zwick.
Indeed we are. Mm-hmm, but indeed. Before we speak to the fellows, Andrew, let's catch up, you and I. How was your week?
My week was good, Michael. I'm worried to ask you about yours. Did you have an all right week? I hear there was some tumultuous things going on.
A little bit, yeah. But tell me about yours.
Well, I had an invite out to the Ojai Shakespeare Festival where a bunch of friends were performing, and I did a little piece up there as well. What a beautiful town Ojai is. I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. You drive up there and you realize it's become the center of so many people's vacation plans, industry people there, so you got to see some old friends, and a real dedication to the arts. So Ojai was beautiful, and the hospitality I received was fantastic.
I've never been. Isn't that funny?
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I haven't. Is it on the way to Santa Barbara? You have to pass it, right? Right?
Yeah,
I guess, zip up
a little road called the 33, and you go up there, and it's really an escape. They filmed a ton of films up there in the 30s and 40s. It's kind of a Shangri-La.
Did you do that over the holiday?
I did.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Nice. Very nice. I too, had a kind of a nice holiday, better than I expected, but it was all here. Knew a great send-off for Paul Strolley,
our
former co-host on this show, and that was great fun. Ca del Sol. Mm. I'll give them a little plug because they're always very classy there and over by Universal Studios.
And Paul is off to Chicago.
He is. He's landed. He's there. He's happening.
And Chicago's gain is our loss for sure.
Absolutely. And to another crazy little restaurant that I hadn't been to in years called Casita del Campo, Mexican restaurant in the Silver Lake area.
Okay.
Great fun, very festive, beautiful restaurant. I mean, fun, beautiful. And it was so nice and catching up on things at the house and hanging out with my dogs. And I had only one hiccup, which that was a very important thing to me personally. I'm not going to cry on radio, but I've been planning this production that I'm producing. I have a nightclub here in Los Angeles, Phil, which is called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. And we present the best of Broadway performers in concert and the Great American Songbook. And I have put this production together as a tribute to the woman who, in my lifetime, taught me everything I know about music, Rosemary Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And one of our key team members from the creative side totally dropped out. Oh no, dear. Over the weekend.
So what?
And
does
we
that
were supposed to go up on the 6th. June 6th.
So yeah. Is that not happening?
It is not happening.
So that means that the invite then is like, I got to put that in the circular file.
You do. And we've established another date right now, which we think is going to work, which is Sunday, July 31st.
Oh,
we've talked about it on
good.
This program, too.
Absolutely.
So anybody that's listening about
yeah.
the, and the show was sold out.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Michael, I'm so
and
sorry.
I bought all the tickets, of course, after he invited me. I thought that the best I could. Oh, so no salmon on a nice bed of greens.
No.
Oh,
not this,
which is wonderful there at Sterling's
yeah,
upstairs. But at the Federal. I'm sorry to hear that, Michael.
I am, too. It just, you know, it set me off in a weird direction.
Yeah.
I've never had that happen to me, that somebody just kind of said they could do the project, started to do the project, and then totally
failed. Oh, my God. Well, I know personally how much this project meant to you, but it sounds like there's going to be another time where the timing's right and things are going to be popping.
Everything happens for a reason.
That's
right?
Absolutely true.
So,
absolutely
I mean, the talent on stage is still in place, and the wonderful Carrie O'Malley from Broadway, who ironically played the role of Betty in White Christmas, originated that role in White Christmas on Broadway in the musical, which was Miss Clooney's
role.
Well, as you know, June 6th is my birthday, and obviously
now you get to have a decent birthday.
Well, I was going
to
say, could you
club?
Have the ladies just come sing to me?
Is that
doable?
For a prize?
I don't, yes. You know, that tends to be the saying a lot in this town. Sure, we can do it for a prize. Just let me know. Well, Michael, I'm sorry that's not happening.
That's okay.
That is a big hiccup, but it's also one that sounds like it's got a good end to it in July. So.
Well, yes, and the reprieve from that little upset was the fact that I had John Lloyd Young at my club for his 13th headlining.
Wow. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
I've seen him there at the club.
You know,
such a talent.
Jersey Boys. Young originated the role of Frankie Valli on Broadway in Jersey Boys. Mm-hmm. Plus, little fact that's not really well known, but John, upon making his debut in that show, holds the record in Broadway history for being the only male person to make a debut on Broadway and win every major theater award as best
that's
actor
great.
In a musical.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. People don't know that.
No.
That's like huge, right?
That's massive.
Huge. Well, we had seen him, actually twice do the role, and then he had come out here to do the Hollywood Bowl's Les Mis, I think
yes,
it was.
Yes, he did.
Had no idea it was him. He played Marius, if I'm not mistaken. And blew us away. Went backstage and met him, or had been introduced before that, so went back and said hello. The most gracious. And then we went to see him at Sterling's.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, last year? Year
yes,
before,
yeah.
Cindy and myself.
Really?
And he commands the stage like no one else that I've seen perform. He simply stands there.
Mm-hmm.
And delivers the story of the song. He doesn't move a muscle sometimes, and you are rapt.
Yeah.
His voice, first of all.
Yep.
But he just has to look out there, and there is this come hither thing that he's got in his eye. I tell you what. You know, the old ladies were starting to think about what piece of undergarment they could throw. And so was I,
they
for some strange reason.
Yes. That's always why I wear 5 or 6 layers.
At
just
least.
Six pairs of boxer shorts, just in case.
But you know, those women, just what Barry said is so true, and I'm going to tell John to listen to this show.
Hi, John.
Those women come in. This is the weird thing. They come in from
all over
the world for this engagement at my place.
Yeah.
100 people, that's all we see. Mm. That's why they come.
Because
they
intimate
want,
setting.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
they want to be able to touch. And he is so good. He spends time with every single one of them in a meet and greet after the show. Yeah. He'll be there for 2.5 hours after the show.
Well, that's an artist who appreciates their audience.
And,
truly.
And remembers many of their names if they're regulars, but some fly in from South America, some from Asia, London. It's no sweat to them because they know him from the movie version.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, so it was very sweet. I must say one other thing. After that, we got John open on Tuesday night, then I ran over to the Pantages Theater for the opening of 42nd Street, which I must say, you know, how do you go wrong with that show? It's still
so entertaining.
That big title
and
show.
And in that space,
when that curtain opens, you see those dancing
dancers,
feet.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, it was swell and fun, and that kind of picked up my spirit. So, yes, I had a nice part of my holiday was nice.
So the show was great, though?
The show was wonderful at the Pantages, and it's there, ladies and gentlemen, through June 19th. So if you have an opportunity to see it, now's the time to pick up the phone and or visit HollywoodPantages.com and buy your tickets online. They're very affordable. You can get rush tickets if you're willing to get there a little early and pay $25 for a seat that might be better in value than a $25 seat.
And, of course, paired with I Only Have Eyes for You, you get a lot of that
down
story.
The street,
that's right,
Al Doolin's life and music on that stage there.
Directed by the wonderful Kay Cole.
Pardon?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Absolutely.
One of my oldest friends. And
did
talented.
Did you see the show?
Yeah, we saw it.
Lovely.
She is just tremendous.
She is.
Just and Jeffrey Scott Parsons in the show.
Jerry Gertner.
Yeah. And, oh my gosh, Kayla Parker, who I had done Grease Live with. She was one of the dancers in Grease Live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the dancers. And, you know, it's hard to find a whole cast that is triple threat.
That's right.
That they can do all
these
of those
days.
Things
yeah.
really
right.
good. Yeah. Not just yeah. passable in one area, but right. in every area.
Absolutely right.
Right. right.
So anyhow, we should move on, don't you think?
I don't know. I'm having a good time. Yeah, these guys seem happy talking about whatever we want. I'm going to stay.
This is what I like. I like to be here as an audience member and listen about the history of Broadway and the LA theater.
We could do it.
Summer
we could
clubs
do
I've
it.
Never been to. And, yeah, okay.
Well, I say we give a good introduction to this fine-looking man sitting to your left, though, Michael.
Okay, let's do that. And am I going to do that? Yes, I am. Ladies and gentlemen, from his first role as a child on TV Star Trek to his unforgettable portrayal of impeccably dressed fast talking lawyer Jackie Chiles on TV's Seinfeld, to his work on miniseries and films, including the new Mission Impossible, CSI, Miami, Star Trek, DS9, Baby Daddy, a show I happen to watch and like, actually, Smallville, NCIS, Shake It Up, and the current Blackish TV series, another favorite of mine, and many, many more. He has had a long and rewarding television career, not to mention his film work in Black Dynamite, Meet the Spartans, and Clay Pigeons. But he's here today to discuss his return to the Los Angeles theater stage in Hillary and Monica, on stage now through June 19th at West LA's Odyssey Theater. Please welcome Phil Morris.
Wow.
They love you. Where do you put these? Where do you put them?
They're in the lobby.
It's Hillary and Monica. They just love the show.
They come every night.
Welcome, Phil. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Boy, oh boy. We love your work. I love your work. I told you I saw you on Seinfeld today. I made a point of watching you as Jackie Chiles, and it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that guy's a force of nature. He makes me laugh. You know, it's,
did you come up with that character by yourself?
I did all by myself, all alone. you know, it was interesting because we had been watching, at the time that Jackie came out on Seinfeld, we'd been watching the O.J. trial for over a year.
Right.
So we all had a very firm grasp of who Johnny Cochran was, who obviously Jackie was patterned after. But I had my own little inside track because I'd been going to the same barbershop as Johnny Cochran since I've been 8 years old.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
So I've seen Johnny Cochran pontificate on everything from, you know, Cadillac or Lincoln, the Raiders coming to Los Angeles, you know, Lakers or Clippers. I mean, I heard this guy just go on and on and on and on. And, you know, of course, my dad, Greg Morris, from the original Mission Impossible, also a celebrity. They just had dueling dialogue all the time, these two great voices.
Oh, that's great.
Thunderous voices. So I had a little bit of an inside track, I think.
And you didn't have to pay for that character study there.
No,
that's amazing.
No, great. And, you know, and Jackie was a little bit of Johnny, but a lot of hustler. You know, a lot of, you know, corner, street corner preacher. And, you know, so he was an amalgam of a lot of people that I know.
That's great.
I just, you know, those kinds of things. And when I saw that performance, every performance you gave in that show came flooding back. You know, I mean, it was really very special.
Well, you know, every time
you're a good actor, just
you.
Like your father was, and we all appreciate your work. So.
Oh, brother, thank you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
it. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about this show and how you would describe it?
I describe it as Neil Simon meets David Rabe. It's a very verbose, right? It's a very verbose.
That makes me sweat.
Yeah, that's
meets
exactly.
Mammoth. Meets Mammoth as
meets,
well.
Meets Mammoth. But yeah. The weird part is that Edward Bell, who is one of our writers, was David Rabe's writing professor at, I don't know if it was Villanova or someplace like that. But so when I mentioned that to him, he was like, well, I was David Rabe's writing professor.
Wow.
So I'm not too far off base
right.
with that. What I mean by that is it's kind of a blend between this very wonderful verbal style of a Neil Simon and then this interpersonal byplay between all of the characters, which kind of underscores our main event, which is Hillary and Monica. Basically, it's about these two writers from New York who want to write about a fictitious meeting between Hillary and Monica. And it's so rife with, you know, sensitive material. One of the characters is very worried about getting sued. So they bring in a lawyer to help figure out the points in which they might get sued. And hence, my character comes to the to the play.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you would, a comedy, yes. I mean, mostly
absolute comedy. Real fast, farce.
Satire?
Crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
An hour and 20 minutes of just rollicking good time.
No intermission?
Know? No intermission. Man, no.
Long one act.
But it doesn't seem that way. It just seems as though we get into the final stretch, and I'm like, gosh, we're almost done.
Yeah.
And I prefer that, actually.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think
with
a lot of people
comedies.
Do. It's a fast food theater community in which we live.
Yeah, no doubt. And my character is Greg Goldfarb, who is...
I'm sorry, could you say that again, please?
Yeah. Greg Goldfarb, yes, indeed. Who, my choice is that he has changed his name because he's an African-American lawyer in Manhattan, and that doesn't really pay a lot of bills. So, but if you're a Jewish lawyer in Manhattan,
you're in.
Yeah. You're on the gold ticket line. So. He's that kind of guy. He's a hustler. I guess I play hustler as well. So.
That's great. Fantastic. We're, of course, talking about Hillary and Monica on stage now at the Odyssey Theater. And you guys run through May 19th. Is that correct?
Well, actually, the 12th.
No. The 12th. Yeah. Okay.
June 12th. Again,
of course. I'm sorry. June, yes, of course. 12th. May, of course. Yep. June 12th. Okay, great. So it's 120 minutes, you said, of nonstop comedy. Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about the Odyssey? What a beautiful little space that is. It's really amazing.
It's a great complex.
Yeah.
You know, they moved from, I think they were in Santa Monica and Bundy for a long, long time. And then they moved to this space
right.
a few years ago. And it's just, I think, in a great location.
Plenty
of parking spaces. You know, it's good for all the West Side people to get there. And even people from the Valley. It's very close to the freeway, you know, to the 405 South. And they do a lot of good productions there. They're doing the Harry Ape right now.
Right.
Stephen Burkoff directed that. And then we're doing our Hillary and Monica jag with Barry Pearl, first of all. Let me just talk about Barry Pearl. I know you're not...
He's not listening, so
yet.
I wouldn't worry about it, yeah.
But he
say
and I
have
left
each other
the room.
for a long time. And we've been waiting to play somewhere together on
long
screen,
time.
On stage.
For a long
and
time.
And so here we are now with Hillary and Monica. Yeah. And I gotta say, every night I go to work... Or I should say, every night I go to play. it is so fun to watch Barry do what he does so beautifully, and it's just an honor. We got Rick Pasqualoni in there, Reba Strober,
yeah.
And Michael Gabbiano, who's our understudy, and we're just a bunch of knuckleheads having a good time.
Yeah,
I think that's the best way to do any sort of entertainment. You know?
Well, especially you're having fun doing it, and it's true fun. The audience has that
same kind of thing,
right?
And Joel Zwick, once again, will not let us get away with not having a good time.
The director, of course.
Oh yeah,
yes.
he's a fun taskmaster.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had the pleasure. I was a pleasure actually meeting Monica Lewinsky at a very fragile time in her life. Not too much after all of that happened, and I have a friend who is a wonderful comedian and actually billed as America's first hearing impaired comedian. You might know her, Kathy Buckley.
Wow.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know Kathy?
Yes.
Lovely lady and a beautiful human being. And she had a show that I was working on with her. I was handling the publicity and public relations called Don't Buck With Me.
I'm sorry, what was it called?
Don't Buck With
Me. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I could get our ratings up here. It'd be the R rating radio show here. Now you're too good with your lips there, man.
We'd opened at the Tamarind Theater and did a very successful long run, and then we moved it over to the Tiffany Theater.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, sure. Remember that?
And that's where Monica came to see it. She was brought by other people that knew Kathy, but she was, of course, when everyone recognized her in the audience, then people were very respectful of her.
Great.
Actually,
yeah, great.
They did not rush up to her and try to have a conversation or anything like that. And she was, I think, pretty thankful that was
I would imagine that's rare for her.
And being a member of the production, I at least was able to shake her hand and say hello. And she, you know, had a great time, and she loved Kathy. So she was a nice girl, you know, with a lot of pressure on her at that point.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's a tough place to be. You know, I mean, nobody asks for that. You know,
right?
And she just wrong place at the wrong time.
That's right.
Well, now Phil, can you tell me a little bit about the reception of this show? Obviously, this is a tense time, man. You got to be careful what jokes you make on the street. Now, I'm somebody who loves a good joke, particularly a political joke. You got to be careful what jokes you make right now. Tensions are high. People, what's the response to this? Which is something. It's got to be very different for a performer to hear that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, we have audiences that kind of get the humor full stop, and they just laugh, barrel laughing. And then we have times where we're doing the piece, and we kind of waiting for the laugh, and the laugh doesn't come. because people are actually listening
right.
to what the content of the joke is, as opposed right. to just the result of the funny. They're listening to, well, what's the genesis of it? Are they downing Hillary?
And right.
I might vote for her in the
right.
primary.
Where's it going to fall? Where are the sensibilities going to fall?
And it's really interesting.
What is the play saying?
And I think every audience enjoys the piece, whether they take it as kind of a political situation or they take it as just a rollicking farce, which is kind of how I look at it. Mm-hmm. It's comedy. So yeah. we damn everybody.
Mm-hmm. Nobody equal opportunity damning.
Absolutely.
Going on. That's
everybody
right.
gets painted with a kind of a nasty brush. And, you know, that's funnier to me.
Well, and essentially, you're talking about one of the strangest times in American culture. I mean, you're
wow.
tapping, and it's so important today because of who's involved now that's
right.
related to that. And you think about that, and you go, man, politics in America are just absolutely nonstop entertainment from the very beginning of the country's inception. So mm-hmm. to be able to comment on that. But as a performer, don't you think it's interesting to feel an audience try to decide if they're going to be with you or not?
Oh, yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
they walk in not trusting you. They're like, what
right.
are these people going to say that's going to make my
right.
night lousy?
Right.
And then to have that open up into laughter and to have a good time and go, oh, yeah, this is our American consciousness. We can laugh at and who we are and what we've become. It's a great thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, on these shorter performance runs of Equity Waiver Theater, such as this is Thursday through Saturday, do you find that one day of the week, I mean, you know, Saturday is always the great night out. What's Thursday like, your audiences? Do you feel a difference because of the day?
Not really. Friday I feel a difference. Right. Because Friday's the end of the work week. Mm-hmm. People like to go home after a long week and sit by the tube.
Right.
It's the best night for television, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Saturday night is the night out. They go to dinner. They have a couple drinks. They come to the theater. And if they're not asleep because of all the drinks they've had, they get highly entertained. And we see that instead of a mural facing us out there, it is, in fact, a raucous crowd. So I think it does. Sunday afternoons, again, they're rested. They're prepared. It's early in the day, so they know they can go home and have mm-hmm. an evening. Thursday, sort of just the other side of midweek, it's kind of amorphous to me, perfectly.
It's a bit of a pick-em.
Personally.
Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
a bit of a pick-em. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, of course, we're talking about Hillary and Monica on stage at the Odyssey Theater. You can go to www.plays411.com/Hillary to find tickets there. And, of course, we'll give that information out as we continue this conversation through the rest of our time here.
Yeah, and let me just say they can also call for tickets at 323-960-7735, and tickets start as low as $25.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nice evening out. I'm sure there's some great restaurants in and around that area.
Yes,
right?
There are. If you'd like me to mention some,
go
I've
ahead.
Eaten at practically
sure.
all of them.
Hold on, I want to be sure we get free food before you do it. Is there any?
So
are they sending anything
they
over?
They could.
Samples of any? No?
Yeah. The San Francisco Saloon, I think it's called.
Yeah,
is
that's
just
it.
Tremendous. We've eaten at Gulp. Those
wow,
are the two,
yeah, Gulp's great.
Yeah,
yeah
there's
the
some other places. There's a Bossa Nova, which is a Brazilian place.
Brazilian.
Right
now, where's
there.
That at?
It's right on Pico, just east.
It's east of the Gulp.
Yeah, I've been by there.
Of Sepulveda.
And there's a sushi restaurant there also. There's a Zanku Chicken up the street.
Right,
on Sepulveda.
Wow. You know,
so a lot of places.
Lots of choices.
Yeah.
It's great, guys.
Excuse me.
I'm going to pause the hilarity for a moment here
yes.
because I've got a feeling with these two gentlemen here we could get going and fail to give an introduction to this fine gentleman to my right. So I want to give you your formal introduction.
Would you please read Phil's instead and attribute all those fine credits to me?
Paul used to say this, and this is true. I honestly get tired just reading your bio. I'm not joking.
Mine
it's like,
in
yes,
particular?
I had to do 3 sit-ups this morning just to get ready for this bio. These two guys are qualified artists here. So, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest credits include playing Sonny in the First National Company of Greece, co-starring as Dottie in Paramount.
Duty. Like, come
okay.
in, come
my
in
natural
make a duty.
Instinct is to naturally never say duty on air.
Well, so that was why. That
and
is
now
why.
It'll happen accidentally for the rest.
I've heard people say Dodie, but that was
right?
Dodie Goodman, who was also
of course.
In the movie.
He's got
so.
Two small kids, though. That's why you did that.
Of course. Yeah. My natural instinct is to stay away from anything that might get me laughed at, and it's the one time I could have actually done
he
it.
He said duty.
Well, it's like in Howdy Doody. That's
right, of course. As Doody in Paramount's big screen smash hit of the timeless musical, and most recently as Stan Weaver in Fox's Grease Live, a great production, by the way.
Thank you.
Very much enjoyed that. Other career highlights include appearances on Broadway as Randolph in the original production of Bye Bye Birdie, Oliver, the producers, and the jukebox musical Baby, It's You. National tours and regional productions include the NBC primetime special Bedtime with Barney, Imagination Island, the national and international tour and video of Barney's Big Surprise, Arnold in Happy Days, a new musical, the critically acclaimed 12 Angry Men at the Pasadena Playhouse, television appearance... Okay, now this is where I have to do my sit-ups and get ready to go here. My goodness. Television appearances include Criminal Minds, General Hospital, House, and ER, all some of my favorites, so I loved seeing that. And his work in films has included The Avenging Angel, My Favorite Martian, and The Newest Pledge, among others, of course. He is a distinguished working theater director here in Los Angeles and one of our favorites here on the show. Please welcome Barry Pearl, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. They're back.
You know,
and they're
Phil,
only sitting for that.
You know, but there are more people applauding for Phil than me. I don't understand that.
Yeah, a few of them went to the restroom.
To make a duty.
There you go.
And the comedy ensues.
It's full circle.
In my short time here on State of the Arts, I've learned very quickly that if we get rolling and we don't do our guest intros, it gets to the end and I've missed my chance. So I had such a good time looking up some of your work. You've done some great projects and spanned the gamut of all these amazing projects from kids' entertainment all the way up to significant works like 12 Angry Men at Pasadena Playhouse, which
is
amazing.
Yes,
so.
It's... The spectrum boggles my mind sometimes.
Right. Well, and it's an attribute to what we have to do in this town.
Yeah.
You cannot be one thing anymore.
Right.
You have to be able to do everything, and you better love doing it.
And for so long, earlier in the career, I was sort of typecast as the clown, if you will. And I think that Grease sort of underscored that, and I felt that... for years after that, I felt that Grease didn't really propel me forward. As it came around to be the iconic phenomenon that it has become, it certainly has helped a great deal. But then also, I was able to stray into the dramatic world, if you will, on both television and primarily stage, mm-hmm. Which I thought I'd never be able to do. You know, the grass is always greener.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why I don't like to watch a lot of comedies is because it feels like it's a busman's holiday. It's what I do, you know, so I don't want to... I love dramatic teleplay. Love it. And really want to do more of that. So when something like 12 Angry Men comes along, directed by Sheldon Epps at the Pasadena Playhouse 2 years
ago... You grab it
with
both hands.
Oh, my
God.
And it was a gift. It was given to me. I didn't even have to read for it.
Wow.
And he was terrific. I saw that production.
Thank you, pal.
It was fantastic.
Thank you.
Great piece.
Really a great piece. Some wonderful actors as well that I was able to work with, and so that was a gift and a dream come true to do something, and you know, more like that I welcome.
Yeah.
Although the next two projects I'm going to do, which I can't say anything about because it hasn't hit the press yet, are both comedies. So
cool, very cool.
So, but you said you would like to do more dramatic work.
Yes.
Basically, is what you're saying.
Yes.
But you know, it takes. I always say this, that the best comedians are the best dramatic
timing.
Actors.
It's about the timing. It's so it, much
not
about the
necessarily
timing.
The other way around.
Right.
But isn't it also that comedy is so close to that dark, tragic side of us?
Yeah.
And that most of us that do a lot of drama, we take ourselves so seriously, we can't undercut that to do the comedy.
Yeah.
But the comedians understand the gravity of life, and that's where they find the funny. So they can easily go to the drunk, in my estimation.
Yeah, you're
guys
right.
Like Jack Lemmon's so brilliant.
Oh.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
So on and on and on. A lot of comic actors, I think, have it over dramatic actors because they don't take themselves as seriously.
Right.
Well,
and
Red
Skelton
did that,
of
course. Favorite comedic actors?
Andrew David James. Well, thank you.
Well,
I appreciate you saying that. You're very kind.
My
very
favorite
kind
dramatic actors, you say?
No. Comedic.
Oh, comedic actors.
Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Of course.
Sure. Gosh, off the top of my head, Jerry Seinfeld, I thought, was
Jerry.
Just
very good, yeah.
Absolutely terrific. Jack Black.
Jack Black's great.
Yeah. Woody Harrelson.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very understated.
He has both of those sides to him.
I like classics. I like Jack Lemmon.
Lemmon, my gosh. You know, Jimmy Stewart, who could,
course.
Again, straddle
really
both of those sides.
Who else? Richard,
what about female?
You know who's a great comic actor?
Female.
Richard Pryor.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, Richard,
of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Female comedic actors?
Yes. Because you mentioned Seinfeld, and one person... You
know, well, her.
Julia,
oh, my gosh. And her Veep is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy, of course.
Right.
But present day, certainly Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I think, is
right.
Way
Melissa
up
McCarthy's
there. Melissa McCarthy is absolutely killing it.
Sharp end of the stick. Kristen Wiig, awesome.
Kristen's amazing, yes. You're right. Awesome. I've always been a huge fan of Carol Burnett. I think her show is one of the most pure forms of comedy, and to watch those guys crack each other up is one of the best parts of that show. Yeah. So.
Oh, and again, on Vanessa Bayer and who's the other dark-haired girl on Saturday Night Live, she with Vanessa Bayer does that thing with the girls are real dumb blondes.
You know, I don't watch it anymore.
Oh, she's terrific. Oh, I wish I could
Amy
remember
Poehler
her
name. Is fantastic.
And Amy Poehler. And her compadre.
Tina Fey.
Tina Fey. So, yes.
Fabulous. Yes. Every female actress that was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Right. That's absolutely
Vicki Lawrence.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Betty White.
White's another great one.
Betty.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have them all here today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
This is your life.
That's what's applauding in the background. That's the audience.
That's what we need on the show, surprise guests.
They left.
They noticeably moved. They left the theater.
Well, now this show that you guys are working on has to be a kick to get to work together. You guys have such a rapport anyways. Like, I mean, I honestly think Michael and I could leave the studio, and some people might prefer that. So, but one of the things that I was struck by immediately was you're talking about you're growing up in the entertainment industry, and you guys have had careers for a lot of years. How has that impacted how you approach each role that you take on?
For me, I think it impacts, it goes to what I define the word professional as, that it does not have, in my estimation, it does, and I'm not the only one that thinks this, does not have to do with agent representation or union representation or whether you get paid or not. It has to do with how you behave on the field. And I believe that starting as young as I did, I was 11 years old in the professional world. Now, by that, I mean getting paid on Broadway, union, et cetera, et cetera.
And how did that happen?
Well, it's an interesting story, too. Do we have another hour?
Yes, we do.
But I was involved in community theater in my hometown of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and initially enrolled in a little dance class. And from there, that led to doing a review at the end of each year through the dance school, and that was the bug that bit me. Community theater there, and then a production of Dark at the Top of the Stairs at the Fulton Opera House, one of the oldest theaters in the country.
When you said Opera House, you went like this.
Yes, I folded. I don't know why. Beverly Sills just kind of entered my body.
He immediately takes on a singer's posture.
And there was a lighting designer who was jobbed in from New York, who was a playwright, aspiring playwright, but needed to pay the rent. So he came to the Fulton to run lights for this production and told my mother, one day I'm going to get your son on Broadway. That was 1959. Two years later, he was friendly with the folks producing Bye Bye Birdie. There was a replacement needed. Johnny Borden was leaving the role of Randolph McAfee. And he said, I got the kid for you. And called my mom. I went into New York like 2 days later by train and never went home. Got the gig and then that propelled. But the point, and to answer your question, that I worked with Gretchen Weiler. May she rest in peace.
Lovely lady she was.
She had replaced Cheetah Rivera in Bye Bye Birdie. Yeah. Talk about a mensch, a lady of the theater.
Wow.
She pretty much was my role model. And from that point, look, I was also a precocious kid. I had my ups and downs, my bumps and grinds. But
I find that impossible to believe.
Truly, I did. But those, I think, that laid the foundation for me being the professional.
Sure.
Defined the way I did it initially before this rant began. She taught me how to behave. And I think that is my cushion. I would fancy it's yours as well, Phil.
I think that's so well said, Barry. I think that what we have to understand is that there are those that came before us. And those that came before us and were illustrious in their own way, we need to take a lesson from.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Take a page from. Because it didn't start with us. And so many of these younger actors, not to down all the young actors, but they do believe that it began and still goes through them.
You're right.
They're the first and the last. No way was I ever in that place. I mean, my father, again, Greg Morris, was my first mentor, and he taught me about being a professional on stage. And he said, son, it ain't that you're good. It's not that you work. It's how you work.
Yeah, Ben.
It's how you get good. It's how you express your good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are good that people can't stand working with.
Right.
You know? So how do you – no, one monkey don't run this show.
Right.
So you have to ingratiate and ingrain yourself into this village that is the entertainment community. And if you can do that and you humble yourself yourself to those that have come before you, you will learn great lessons that you will carry forward, that then you will pass on and reach back and help the next generation.
Absolutely.
So that's
for me, that's one of the most important things that, that has changed with independent film coming up. So often you're looking for the new and the different, and you're going on set with people who don't have a long history. And when the studio system was in place with all of its failings as well, there was a constant legacy that you had to live up to. And I've been very fortunate in my life. I met people like Alan Hunt, of course, who has been so wonderful.
Well.
And I've worked with him for 15 years now.
Love
and every
Alan.
Time you learn more, you develop. I think there's a major vacuum for children and young people looking for mentors now to how to be a professional, how to make it in the industry, not just be on stage, not just do a role well.
It's not just talent.
Yeah,
it's not just talent.
Absolutely right.
And I use this particular rant when I'm working with young kids, as I did just recently in Camp Rock, Panic Productions Camp Rock, and previously Panic Productions 13 the Musical, and Palos Verdes Performing Arts production of 13 the Musical that I also just did in this past year. And all those kids that come into my sphere go away knowing and getting the feeling about what I'm talking about. And that's a pro. And it they live through me, I through them, and it's this wonderful dynamic that I continue to promote. That's what I'm I think I've been placed here for.
Yeah? Really? Because you do it so well.
Thank
you.
He does.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you very, very much.
And that's an interesting mission, because I think within our careers we all have to have kind of submissions. Of course, everybody wants to do different kind of things and more interesting or more artistic projects. But what can we actually leave behind? What can we give to the people who've worked with us? Who can we make better by how we are on stage? Very important, and nobody's talking about it right now.
Well, and you know, as kids, young people that you're talking about, if they leave their minds, you know, available to what you have to say, they, it will be for the better for them. It's those who, as you said, could be the case where they think it's all just about them. Mm-hmm. And that's, you see the difference in their performances and their work.
I would like to
You're calling somebody?
No, I'm not calling somebody. But I'd like to read to you, because it's so pertinent, and it's a short paragraph, the quote at the end of every email that I send out under my name and my website. And it is this: the life I touch, for good or ill, will touch another life, and that in turn another, until who knows where the trembling stops or in what far place my touch will be felt. Frederick Buchner is the author of that. And you just don't know who you're going to touch, who you're going to impact.
Well, you know, you asked the question about the audiences, and one thing I've learned a long time ago is it's not my responsibility to control how the audience responds.
Right.
It's not my duty to...
They're sending again.
U-T-Y.
Michael's got the heart of a five-year-old child.
That's why we all get along.
You know, so as long as I keep it there, my responsibility is to my character.
You're right.
Is to my playmates on stage, is to the play itself. As long as I invest myself in that as honestly and as truthfully as I can, the audience is going to come away with something.
Right? That's right.
And what it is, that's not my job.
It's absolutely right.
So. Nor how many folks are there in the audience. That used to bother me years ago.
Don't care.
Oh, there's only 30 people in the audience. But you know,
if you're there, buddy, and then I'm kicking.
Right, exactly.
You're not there, I got a problem.
It's funny. Yeah. I remember being about 13 years old and walking with my father downtown in the town where we grew up, which wasn't a big town, but had you know, all classes of people, and including a homeless segment of the population. And there's a homeless man, and I remember my dad, you know, got a little money out and gave him the money, and I'd say, well, you know, a lot of people say you shouldn't do that because they may go out and use it for drugs or for alcohol. And my dad says, it's not my job to figure out what he's going to use it for. My job is to do the best I can for the people who are in front of me. And that stuck with me to this day. I'm not sure if those were the exact words he used, but I think of that constantly. I think in theater it's very true, because we can't control the audience reaction. Mm-hmm. So you have to give as much as you can give and try to be as good as you can be and then move on. You're right.
And I think you just said it, that the audience comes... Every audience comes away with a different take on what they've just seen,
and in
that audience, it could be very different, you know, placement of what they just saw.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like when we go to a show and you say to your guest, and she, yeah, I thought it was okay. In the end, she said, "What do you mean you thought it was okay? It was fantastic."
That's right. Different perspective.
What's wrong with you? Yeah. You know,
well, you never know. Somebody's having a bad day, or somebody has a particularly bad relationship with the subject matter. You can't control those kind of things.
Nor should you.
One of the things I want to talk about, we've got obviously some fun stuff to get to here at the end of the show, but you guys have an amazing support staff for this show, including Michael Mullen, who's one of my favorites. I had the privilege of working with him for for Loot, Jordan's Loot, down in Little Fish Theater in San Pedro. Great actor, great costume designer.
Yes, terrific. Yeah. We did Serato together. I can't remember if there was anything beyond that, but he's really an actor's costume designer.
Right, you know? He very much is.
Well, because he's, as you say, he's an actor himself.
Absolutely.
Though I've never seen Michael's work.
You know, it's interesting. Joe Orton, I thought, fit him so well. He did such a great job in that role. But more than anything, he just brings such artistry to everything he does,
indeed.
Which I love.
He's truly a creative person. Truly creative. And we've got Tiffany Thomas.
Tiffany
and Debbie
Thomas.
Blanc,
wonderful.
Right.
Yeah. Stage managers.
Debbie.
And
that's right. And Lee Fortier.
Lee Fortier, a producer.
We like Lee. I like Lee very much.
Yasmin. Yeah. We've got a lot of great people, Chris.
Exactly.
Andy.
Yes, exactly. Good folks. A whole team.
Good
village,
theater happening all over Los Angeles.
Indeed.
You know, we say this often on this program to people listening to put down the remote and get away from that television and get in your car and go and experience live theater.
Get the live in you. Yes. Get the live in you.
Absolutely.
But I think we have more theater now than we've ever had, actually, in this city. It just keeps growing and growing in leaps and bounds, which is a wonderful thing. And our Hollywood Fringe Festival seems to be better and better each year in producing great product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
so
more media people are doing theater, too. More guys like me who do a lot of TV. That's a staple. But we're itching to
stepping
really
on the boards.
Work, you know?
Well, and on Broadway, too, you have that. You know, and that's dollar signs for the producer folks when they can get folks from film and TV. And, yeah, the Fringe. I did directed a play last year for the Fringe called Pop that is now called Rewind.
That's right.
Written by Sam and Jeffrey Rose. They've reworked it, hence Rewind now, and just changed some characters up. And we're hoping to move that to another level at some point. Great stuff going on at the Fringe.
Cool.
It's just begun.
It's,
right?
Well, no, I think it's just beginning now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Phil, have you done Broadway? No.
No, I have not.
Have you entertained the
He doesn't mean New York. He just means downtown Broadway.
Yeah,
have you ever
done
a monologue?
I've given away sample cigarettes. It's what I do. I was asked a long time ago to do Broadway, but here's the weird part. Again, I get back to the media guy in me. I had just gotten a series picked up at CBS, and they asked me to go in to do Six Degrees of Separation and take over for Mr. Daniels on the boards. And actually, Gene Zaks had asked me to do it. And I just, I just couldn't turn down that network thing, man.
Right.
And now I wish I kind of had, because I wish that my journey on the stage had been more prolific than it has been now.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. And that's
it's
where
not
maybe,
over.
Maybe it's coming.
But it's not
I mean?
Over. Yeah,
no,
exactly.
It's hardly over. But yes, I'd like to do a lot more. Yeah. I'd love to go to New York and challenge myself.
Well, you have such a commanding presence as a person, and what you do, a lot of that sits in your performances as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'd love to transition and go there. Absolutely.
Oh, and you know, again, he's a gift to work on stage next to. He totally brings it. And where some folks have problems moving from one medium to the next, stage to film, film to stage, because of the largeness which you sometimes have to bring to the stage, he makes this transition just beautifully. He knows just how to do it in front of the camera. Excuse me. And what he needs to do in terms of his energies, his size, et cetera, on the stage. So I've seen him do both, and I'm here to tell you that it's never too late, my friend.
Oh, brother, thank you. Thank you.
We are fortunate to live in a town where we get to be trained in both of those mediums, because they're two very different art forms.
Mm-hmm.
And as you learn the intricacies of both, you can do great things and touch different parts of your artist's spirit, which is a good thing. So. We're, of course, talking about Hillary and Monica, now on stage at the Odyssey Theater. You can go to plays411.com/Hillary to find out more about that.
Or reservations are available by telephone, 323-960-7735. Tickets start as low as $25. And the performances are Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sunday at 3 p.m.
Michael, I'm almost nervous about this last part of our show
to
share with these two gentlemen. I'm worried we may never get the show back if we give it to them. I really am not sure. It's like handing over the steering wheel to my five-year-old.
Did you explain what
I did not. No, I looked at these two men and I said, they don't need any forewarning. They're ready to go. So let's surprise them.
This is kind of
a
baptismal. Barry's been through it once.
Right.
This is your true baptismal.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We ask of all of our guests to share with us some a most awkward, embarrassing story that's happened to you in your career, whether it's on the stage or whether it's in film or television. It can be funny. It can be serious. It can be anything you want it to be.
Okay. We're going to go to the origin of this whole interview, which was Star Trek. You asked about Okay. So I did that. That show called Miri, an episode called Miri, was with Michael J. Pollard and Kim Darby.
Wow.
The episode, real briefly,
great talents.
Was about another planet that was very much like Earth that the Enterprise lands on, and it's inhabited by kids. And the reason is, at a certain age, at adolescence, they developed a disease that then would kill them. So they stunted their growth. So all these kids are hundreds of years old, but they're kids. So it was a stunt cast gig in that my sister and I, the offspring of Greg Morris on Mission Impossible, Martin Landau's kids were on it.
Wow.
William Shatner's kids were on it.
Wow.
Vince McAvity, who was the director, his kids were on it. John Grise and Cary Grise, John's a great actor and Cary is something else now, but they were both on it. And so anyway, we do the first day, and they wanted kids that were not actor kids but knew how to handle themselves on a set. Actors' kids know how to handle themselves on a set. Shut up when the thing is on, act when they say act, and stop when they say cut. When they asked us our names, oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. When they asked us our names, all I could remember was every report card I ever got in school said Morris, Phil. Okay, you see where did I give the joke away already? So when they're asking, that's so and so, they're like,
yes, blah 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 blah,
and yes, and you are Morris, Phillip,
very formal.
It was so
what an unusual name.
Right, it's like, really,
is comma after some kind of uncle?
How do you spell that? It's, as it sounds, C-O-M-M-A.
As in comma Camille Young.
That's that was
fantastic.
An easy one. So silly. So that's a kid trying to be smarter, you know, too clever by half, actually.
That's great.
Barry, do you have one for us?
One?
One? One, he said.
I chose the most innocent one. You know?
Yeah, no points for nudity for you, though, my friend.
Well, that's the one. I was doing Let My People Come at the Village Gate in New York in the late 70s, mid-70s. And when I first joined the show, I of course had to completely undress. I couldn't, you know, you never talk about this back in the day, but I can now. What are they going to do to me?
Right.
I'm collecting the pensions. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And so I'm on stage to the last number completely naked with everybody else completely naked. And the strobes are going and the red lights and it's blinding. And it's at the Village Gate, which is kind of this thrust theater. And out from those from that stage are tables, long tables, and lots of people with drinks. Because you could – and fortunately, they were plastic cups because I fell off the stage one of those tables. And somebody quickly, you know, lent a hand and lifted me back up onto the stage. I immediately exited the stage and went into the bathroom, sat down, so humiliated because it was that actor's dream of being on stage naked and something crazy happened. Well, this was for real. So, you know, I mean, after I washed the scotch and gin off my body, I was fine. But that was probably the most embarrassing thing that ever happened.
Butt naked.
Completely butt naked.
From that day on, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, that was known as a lap dance.
Yeah. So.
My goodness.
Yes.
Wow. That is
and
one
this
of the
is before the
had.
Name duty was attached
to your career. My God. And you know, and he and I, being the Bye Bye Birdie was your very first
right,
show.
Of course.
That was my very first show. And I grew up in that show and I did it all over, you know, California.
Really?
Yeah, I played your role.
You played Randolph.
Yes, and then I played Hugo eventually.
Yes, right.
I mean, I actually started in the ensemble and then worked my way up.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's where one of my most embarrassing stories
happened. Okay, which was?
We can't really tell.
Oh, sure.
But it did involve nudity as well.
In Bye Bye Birdie.
In Bye Bye Birdie.
I don't even
want
to imagine.
I will tell you very
quickly.
Theater in the Round, 3,000 seats, Santa Monica Civic Auditorium.
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke and Jerry Van Dyke were alternating in the role.
My goodness.
Because Dick was helping Jerry transfer into musical theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the name alone, you know,
sure.
That was worth something on the marquee. Opening number, you know, the transition from
Telephone
New
Hour?
York, from to, New York.
Oh,
to
Sweet Apple.
To Sweet
yes,
Apple.
Yes.
That transition, we had to underdress in Sweet Apple clothes, and
okay.
We had our New York clothes, you know, on at the beginning. And then in the orchestra is vamping, and the strobe lights are going for that underdress, and being in the round, the dressers come down the aisles, and they just tear things off of you, and the lights come up, and there we were in Sweet Apple, Ohio, and I had an American flag waving in my hand, and a red sweater on, and a white little shirt, and very, you know, American looking, and I felt the worst draft in the world, and I looked down, and I was standing there in my dance belt. because I forgot to put my pants on.
That's a great story.
And, I mean, that side of the theater got their money's worth, I assure you. But,
and to this day, Michael always underdresses for even the radio show. Exactly. He's got four layers on just in case.
That's great.
What a couple of great guests we had today, Michael.
Indeed.
This was a blast.
Yes,
what
indeed.
A blast.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Barry Pearl as well as to Morris Comafil. To the great Phil Morris here today. And just a reminder to get your tickets to go see Hillary and Monica as soon as you can at the Odyssey Theater.
Absolutely. Andrew, thank you. Pleasure to start the sixth year of this program with you.
Michael, may this week bring much better things than your last week, my
friend.
Thank
you very much.
Good things coming, I'm sure. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll look forward to seeing you here on LA Talk Radio next week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.